Welcome back to Current State for Friday, the 30th of January. I'm Mark Bayshore. With months to go before the vote, the fate of Michigan's 1 cent sales tax hike has been leading the news throughout January. To discuss that and the month's other top stories, we welcome our January Month in Review panel of Capitol correspondents, Tim Skubick, the wearer of many hats, including the host of Off the Record at Michigan Public Television.
Hey,
hi,
Mark.
Tim.
How you doing?
Very well, thank you. Happy New Year. Kathleen Gray reports for the Detroit Free Press and Michigan.com. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Mark.
And Mickey Hurton is editorial director for the Lansing City Pulse. Welcome back, Mickey.
Good morning.
And Happy New Year. Let's bring our listeners up to speed with the most recent iteration of the sales tax discussion. Yesterday, State Rep. Anthony Forlini proposed a backup plan that would take effect if the sales tax proposal went down. Here he is.
I think it would be prudent for us to start working on the alternative. I think the public needs to know that if it doesn't pass on May 5th, what is the alternative?
Still 3 months to the vote. Why would alternatives to the sales tax proposal, why are alternatives being kicked around here?
Well, there's a real possibility that the sales tax isn't going to pass on May 5th when it's put to voters. So we got to do something with the roads. However, if you've got all talk of alternatives out there already, this is a pretty confusing subject to begin with.
Exactly.
This is just going to muddy the waters even more.
Tim, what do you think?
Well, the governor's going to try to keep this simple. He's not going to talk about all of the permutations that are in this proposal, and there are a bunch of them. In fact, if you read the proposal as Bernie Porn did for Epic MRIA, the vote turns around from 46% yes to 49% no. So the governor's going to ignore most of what's in this proposal and focus on one thing, public safety, saving lives. That will be his message. He will be very disciplined. He thinks he can win this thing. I think there are doubters in this town, but he's got a shot at it. He's right. It's early.
Mickey?
Well, yeah, but that may be his message, but there'll be lots of other messages, and that's the problem. And I think the fact that Truscott Rossman bailed on this proposal, as we've been talking about, they see it may not be winning. And it's going to be confusing the way it's constructed.
Martin Wehmeyer is now in charge of promoting the promoting this thing. What do you read into that? Truscott Rossman out, Martin Wehmeyer in. What does that mean?
Well, there was a difference in philosophy on the message to sell this thing. Like Tim said, the governor wants to keep it very simple. And I'm not quite sure what the message the other team was proposing. But they want to fix the roads, save lives is kind of the mantra there.
This is really a pattern after the personal property tax ballot proposal, which was all about giving a tax break to corporations. You didn't hear one word of that in any of the commercials that proposal was. It was all about money for local governments. The governor's doing exactly the same thing here. Mm-hmm. This is about avoiding the crumbling concrete in the bridges. It's about avoiding the potholes and having an accident. There were two major stories in the paper last week on the very same day. A father and a son were killed. They think it was related to a pothole. And we had a Michigan truck driver who drove down on his own free will to Ohio and banged into a bridge that was being repaired. And so that's the kind of stuff that can help the governor sell this.
And as recently as yesterday, the governor was hitting the public safety aspect of this thing. He also mentioned it on CNN. He mentioned it in the State of the State. Here's Governor Rick Snyder yesterday.
It's something that resonates with people because it's scary. You go underneath one of these bridges and think about a chunk of concrete falling on your vehicle, or you're out and you hit a pothole and you blow a tire or something. That's a terrifying event.
Will safety become, or has it already become, a key message that supporters will use to defend this?
Yes, it has. Certainly the governor, but it's also going to be an economic one for people. How many people have had tires blown? How many people have had to have their rims replaced or their axles fixed or something like that after hitting a pothole? And remember, this is coming up in May, 2 months after the pothole season begins in Michigan. So it's certainly going to be fresh on everybody's minds.
But, Kathy, it's still a personal tax. I mean, I will pay it. And the others may be a little more abstract. It's easy to vote no for a tax increase. And that's just the default message. And I think that begins to play out, especially as it is confusing that they say, what about this? What about the excise tax? What about the ad valorem tax? all of these other issues. It's easy to vote no.
At the end of the day, we'll find out what kind of people we are. I asked the governor yesterday, do you believe people will vote to save money or to save lives? And he says, isn't a life worth more than a dollar? We're about to find out in Michigan. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure that everybody would answer that the way you would think they would
because
answer.
Because we know what the legislature's answer has been. The dollar's more important than the lives.
They certainly haven't done what the governor wanted them to do, Mick.
Right. And, right, or haven't done the right thing.
Tim Skubick, Mickey Hurton, Kathy Gray on WKAR Current State's Month in Review. Concerns were raised Wednesday after the Anderson Economic Group in East Lansing released an analysis showing that passage would result in the elimination of annual depreciation discounts on registration fees for cars. Here's economist Patrick Anderson with the Michigan Public Radio Network's Rick Pluta.
So when you work that through a fairly complicated federal income tax analysis, giving that up has the effect of increasing our federal income taxes by about $102 million a year.
How big of a deal was this?
Well, it's a big deal when you put a $102 million price tag on it. However, for the individual person, it's, you know, you pay about $153 for your registration to register your car every year. You're able to deduct that on your taxes. And I think that it's about an $82 or $85, somewhere around there, hit to taxpayers. So, is that a big enough hit? And again, it's just a message that kind of muddied the waters
once again. The governor's not so sure that his friend, Mr. Anderson, is correct. The governor says this can be, if there is a problem, it can be fine-tuned through the legislature, and so they're doing their homework on it. So he's not willing to concede that point. Mm-hmm. But this is just another example of how complex this thing is. The people at home are going, registration fees, what does this all mean?
And why won't the governor tell us the truth, which is the type of advertising campaign that the no people will mount.
But you know, there's a question as to whether they're going to have any money to mount that campaign. I'm hearing
true.
That more and more. Tom Shields, a Republican consultant, doesn't think they're going to have a lot of bucks to counteract the governor's message, who he may come up with $5-10 million or so.
Yeah.
So if there's no money on the other side, it's still not a done deal for the governor, but it makes it easier.
And more recently, we've been hearing about dollars that will be getting into the campaign for passage of the proposal. Michigan Association of School Boards, I'm hearing State Board of Education, possibly the MEA. How big
No, the MEA is not putting any money in this.
They will not.
I talked to Steve Cook. He says the cupboard is bare.
But they've got a big platform, don't they, with a lot of members
sure, they
that
can
they'll
send
be
out
talking about
on teachers.
Their emails and websites and stuff like that.
But he's not going to pony up any money.
How big an impact will this, or whatever organizational support is generated for it, how big an impact will that have?
Well, it's going to be on-the-ground support, on-the-ground resources. It's going to be the MEA sending emails out to its members. It's going to and urging them to send to their members to talk with their family members and things like that. Because there's a lot of money for schools in this proposal. The construction trade unions. They're going to be heavily involved in this, too, either with ponying up some money or, again, boots on the ground.
Every one of these issues has a target group. I talked to the guy who runs the Mass Transit Association. He has a list of 500,000 riders. He can target those folks and say, you know what, there's money in here for buses if you'll give me a yes vote. Mm. I think this campaign is won not through the air war on commercials for the general public, but each one of these special interest groups, as Kathy suggests, targeting their people, and they have a good relationship with them. I say, look it, guys, if you vote yes on this, here's what we get. And we all know that in politics, it's all about what we get.
But will people come out in a May primary?
Well, that's the question. And I think if you bang at your supporters and say, you've got to get out, I think he's got
possibly.
A shot at it.
Mm. Possibly.
Speaking of revenue, earlier this month we learned, unexpectedly it appears, that Michigan's general fund would be facing a deficit soon. How did this unfold?
Well, tax credits that were given out during the Granholm administration, during the Engler administration, and even during the first years of the Snyder administration are starting to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Those are starting to be having to be paid back.
I understand a big one was redeemed. Just in December, like mid-December or thereabouts,
and
that really upset the ship.
Well, this money was targeted at General Motors and Ford. Okay, I got an email this week from the governor, former governor, who's taking umbrage to all the attacks that she's taking. And she said, remember, we helped save the auto industry with these tax credits, and now they are coming home to roost. The governor stopped them in 2011, but he's got this backlog. And I think we're going to hear in the next couple of weeks there will be negotiations from the governor's office with these folks to see if they can phase it out on a faster stream so that the hit on the state budget is not as severe as it could be.
Phase it out.
Phase it out.
A gradual thing.
Right.
Okay. Does the legislature, okay, so that's one option for dealing with this. Are there other plans being put forth to address this shortfall?
Well, they're going to cut services. I mean, it's as simple as that. The question is where. They're going to leave education alone, K through 12, community college, higher ed, or sacrosanct, and also local governments, revenue sharing. So those are off the table. Everything else is on.
Film credits?
That was introduced to get rid of that. And for your listeners, many of whom are civil servants and work for the state, the anxiety level about layoffs is right about off the charts. Asked the governor the other day, will you promise no layoffs? Looked you right in the eyes, can't do it. And talked to other key players, chairman of appropriations in the House, promised no layoffs, can't do it. So those people are at risk.
Tim Skubick, go ahead, Kathy.
Well, there's one other little pot of money that they can tap. The Rainy Day Fund has got $380, almost $400 million in it. So that's something that they could use, too. I'm not sure that they're going to, but it's out there.
But here's my question. We talked about this. Where's the growth? I mean, in theory, these credits are designed to provide jobs, which in turn ought to provide economic benefits. So something is really flawed.
Does no one keep track of that?
Well, there's another
somebody
sidebar.
Must.
There's another sidebar to the story, Mickey, and you hit on a good point here. They are now going to go after the MEDC.
Yes.
I think the MEDC will take a hit in the budget, even though there's not a lot of general fund money there. But just from a philosophical standpoint, I think both R's and D's are sitting back and saying, you know what? They've had free reign. They've given out all these credits. What do we have to show for it?
Right. And we know we have a deficit now.
Precisely.
So.
And the legislature is already talking about more oversight over MEDC in this first week when they're really starting to meet.
And the MEDC has never been a favorite of conservatives from the Mackinac Center on down. They just said it's picking winners and losers. And who created it? John Engler, the one and only.
But the other real problem is, though, this is the game we're in. And it is a race to the bottom, but everybody is offering everything they can to attract business. So even if it doesn't get the benefits that we'd like. If you want them, you still have to pay, and it's a bad game.
Mickey Hurton of Lansing City Pulse, Tim Skubick of Michigan Public Television, Kathy Gray of the Detroit Free Press on Current State's Month in Review. The legislature is hot to advance the repeal of prevailing wage in Michigan. Prevailing wage mandates union-level pay and benefits for workers on state-funded construction projects.
It's a cost savings to local governments and our schools. And anything we can do to make their lives easier in terms of cost, I think, is better for the taxpayer.
Senate Majority Leader Meekhoff there defending repeal. The governor has said, not for the first time, not on my agenda. What is the vibe right now in the Capitol regarding prevailing wage?
Well, it's not going to happen right away. It is going to happen. Both the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader are pretty committed to it.
It will go to the governor's desk?
I think it will go to the governor's desk. I don't, as it's written right now, I don't think the governor's going to sign it. He's always saying it's not on my agenda, but he's been much stronger on this one because
he really means this one.
Well, one of his key things that he's got going this year is promotion of skilled trades. And how do you promote skilled trades when you're also promoting a cut in their wages?
Mm-hmm.
So he certainly isn't for this. The Democrats aren't for this.
Is he also more likely to stand firm as a lame duck?
Yeah. But Mr. Meekhoff, the Senate leader, sort of backed off from this week when he had laying out of his priorities. This was not on his top of his agenda. He said it's more long term. So that's kind of a little distance that he's put in between there. But I think they have I think it could be a close vote. Not all the Republicans are on board on this thing.
Hmm. So it's unlikely to become the right to work of 2015.
Not with the governor on board.
Okay, right. Another union-related issue from a week ago today, Michigan union membership registered the third largest drop in the country last year, from 16.3% of the workforce to 14.5%. Here is Sam Englot from the liberal group Progress Michigan.
It's this kind of trend continues, I think what we can expect to see is a drop in workplace safety standards, a drop in benefits, and diminishing wages across the state.
How much of a stir did this create downtown?
A big one.
I didn't see the needle move.
Oh, really?
Maybe we're looking at wrong dots.
Kathy, how do you interpret a big response from that then?
You know, and I'm thinking about down in Detroit too, where the union membership is huge, and you've got a lot of people here crowing about how right to work is really working, and how you know, we should have had it all along. Look at all the people who are leaving their unions because of right to work. It certainly has some political implications. A union that has fewer members has less money to spend on political campaigns. And so their clout is diminishing, certainly.
But closer to Lansing, less of a response?
Well, Republicans in the legislature who don't like unions to begin with went, aha, see, we're right. Okay, so that just feeds into their whole mantra that, they want to do more stuff, and prevailing wage would be Exhibit A.
But it's an erosion of the middle class. We know that we've lost so much ground there. This is just another example of it. And I always love the irony that Michigan now boasts about its economic recovery, which was in part led and accountable for the auto industry. It's come back highly unionized. So our most unionized industry and our strongest industry is the one that takes Michigan out of the depth of the recession, and we still hate it.
Don't the unions have the opportunity to – how are the unions responding, first of all? Do we see a response?
There's an interesting sociological thing going on here. This is not your granddad's or your daddy's union, all right? You have many people in the union who have no idea what the roots were that people lost their lives to create the union, and there's not buy-in from the younger people, and the older people are frankly dying off and getting out of – I ran into a union leader who will go unnamed in the hallway the other day, and he said – I can't get these people on board on anything. There's no passion. There's no moving. You know, I want them to vote on this sales tax thing, and they're going, maybe yeah, maybe no. Well,
I had the same kind of discussion, and I was amazed at how poorly they sell their benefits to their members.
They assume that these things just happen.
Part of the problem is that they've got a two-tier wage system. The younger people who are coming in are getting paid less than the old-timers. And so there's that kind of dichotomy, too, that how do you get young people in when they're seeing older people in there making a lot more money than them doing the same work?
You promise them that we're going to try to get you up there, because do you think they're going to do it on their own? Not a chance.
And we have to be together on this in order to get it done.
Right.
Well, this is a priority of the new president of the UAW, which we will learn more about this summer, as I understand it. Let's get a little bit closer to home here for just a second. The biggest city of Lansing story so far this year is the dismissal of Board of Water and Light GM Peter Lark. Second might be Mayor Virge Bernero's recommendations just last night on BWL governance. Mickey Hurton, you've been following the BWL story. What did the mayor propose last night?
Well, essentially, he said that he will put in a watchdog. That's how I look at it. It's sort of an overseer to keep things under control. But he had, last week, and I talked to him a number of times, for all intents and purposes, he wanted that BWL chief executive reporting to him, and he bailed on that. And I suspect—
Did he get more resistance to it than he anticipated?
I suspect the union flack convinced him, because remember, they got rid of Sandy Novak, the previous one, because of the union workers were upset about that, and there was flack on that. I also suspect the business community raised its voice on this, and I wouldn't be surprised if organizations like LEAP or the Chamber of Commerce came to him and said, we do not need a politicized utility in this market, because this is a radical change from just a week ago.
He proposed specifically to limit long-term contracts. He was on the program a couple of days ago and made a point that nobody at City Hall has more than a one-year contract.
But nobody at City Hall is managing a $350 million organization that's highly complex, that deals with regulatory issues, power plants, union issues. Running the BWL is a big job. It's far larger than running the city. It's just by every measure. And to get the person he needs to come in, a top quality manager, they may have no choice. This must be what the industry expects.
Will there be any money left in the till after Peter Lark collects on his 5-year contract? That's the question. Maybe the lights will go out.
I asked Mayor Bernero to the extent that he's thought about it, whether or not he would be inclined to pursue legal action should the $900,000 payout unfold, and he was reluctant to answer that question. I think that's a fascinating thing to look at.
Is the guy an at-will employee or not? That's the question.
Yeah.
But that contract, I mean, look, remember they went into this meeting, they said, we're either going to fire you for cause or we're going to fire you without cause, which all it says is we don't know which one, but we're going to do one of them come hell or high water.
That was a full employment bill for a bunch of attorneys in town.
Well, it is, yeah.
A group opposing what it considers a power grab by the mayor has formed, and it was concerned that with Bernero's thought that the BWL board perhaps ought to be abolished. Last night he said that was on his won't-do list. He actually put out a won't-do list, and that was one of them, along with not selling the utility. Do those won't-do items, Mickey, take any steam out of the mayor's resistance here?
Well, I think they do. I mean, but remember, there's also a council resolution now. So you had Aylin Bowles and you had Jody Washington propose regulating the council. I mean, regulating the Board of Commissioners and trying to weaken its power. So we'll see what happens. Remember, the council's a player in this too.
Well, you've got a lot of other communities to think about that have a stake in this as well. East Lansing, Lansing Township, other places. That
and the board is still scheduled to expand on July 1st
to allow the
non-voting members on there.
Yeah, but Bonero said he didn't care. He told me in the story, and I wrote this, he said, yeah, sure, Fletcher and Triplett will bitch and moan, but so what?
That doesn't sound like the mayor.
America's angriest mayor.
Yes, still.
That's a direct quote.
Still. Still America's angriest mayor. A new year and another Facebook bombshell from Dave Ajima, Republican National Committee man from Michigan. He shared an article written by a person claiming to be a public defender who wrote, referring to blacks, they can't control their impulses well. This has become a routine. Should we become accustomed to it, or can we expect the Republican National Committee to expel Dave Ajima at some point? Seems like this has been going on a long time.
Well, it's not up to the Republican National Committee to expel him. It's up to the state party to do it. Or that's what the Republican RNC has said. You know, state party, we'd like you to take care of this. And, you know, the state party, they've got a lot of stuff going on right now. They've got a new chairman coming in who, if the tea leaves are right, is going to be Ronna Romney McDaniel, who works with Dave Ajima as the other RNC committee woman.
And she has said squat about this.
She has said nothing. Go ahead.
Here is Michigan GOP party chairman Bobby Shostak for the record.
The governor has said it, and I've said it. Leaders across the state have said it. Other elected officials have said, you know, this is not the kind of dialogue that we want coming from our Republican leadership.
Ronna Romney has voiced opposition to Ajima.
No, she hasn't.
She hasn't said anything about it.
Okay.
And for good reason. She wants to be elected chairperson. Okay, if she wades into this thing, someone will be unhappy with her, and like good politicians always do, you try to avoid controversy. She's got to hang on until the end of February.
Which is exactly the point. It does reflect a strain of thinking within the Republican Party. Mm. And I think that's good to know. I mean, it's a gift that keeps on giving for people who want to know what's really happening.
Is there a free speech aspect of this story that I think we have not covered? I suspect that there is.
There may be.
Well, you could say it. I mean, no one says you shouldn't say it. It's do you want your organization to reflect what they're saying?
And I mean, he's a leader in the party. He's got one of three positions, top positions in the state party. And is that reflective of the state party as a whole?
Especially when the party's saying we want to broaden the tent and get more people under the tent, some would argue what Ajima is doing is putting the flap down of the tent and say you need not bother to come in.
Certainly. Republican Greg McNeely of the Michigan Freedom Fund on Off the Record this weekend. What can you tell us?
Well, we're focus grouping it right now to see if we put it on the air.
I'll come down and help you with that.
Would you
I'll
please? Yes, sir. There's a line in there, but I'm not going to do it. He was very engaging. He doesn't like the governor opposing prevailing wage. He thinks the free market ought to be at work. He doesn't want to put a cap on charter schools. He's in full square with all the charter schools. He thinks the governor made a mistake and it was inappropriate when he used the platform of the state of the state to vote yes on the sales tax. He said that was sort of a violation. But then on the other hand, he said, hey, the governor's doing great stuff that no other governor would have done. And then the end of the day, the governor will go down in history as a great governor. So he's a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Greg McNeely of Michigan Freedom Fund on Off the Record with Tim Skubick here on Michigan Public Television Stations and at WKAR.org. We want to thank our panel, our Month in Review panel, Tim Skubick. Kathy Gray reports for the Detroit Free Press and Michigan.com. Mickey Hurton is editorial director of the Lansing City Pulse. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.